And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherDigest.com's publisher, Ryan Burns. And we welcome you back to our second podcast of the week here. We told you we were going to do this bi-weekly going forward here, and we held true to our promise. So I think we're doing well, Luke. What do you think?
I think we're doing okay. You know, again, we're going to preview this week's game against Colorado State. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, so what we have in the agenda here tonight, or this afternoon, or whenever you are listening to this, we're going to talk a little bit of recruiting here for the 2016 class. We're going to talk with Keegan Pope, who is the lead football beat writer for the Collegian out there in Colorado State. We're going to talk about, after that, we will talk about the Gophers' injuries heading into Colorado State. There have been some injury updates on places from the offensive line with Josh Campion to a new surprise name in the secondary that may not be playing, who's been a key contributor. And then we will end it here with Luke and I discussing our predictions for the Gophers' second game here against Colorado State on at 2:30 on the CBS Sports Network on Saturday. So it should be a great episode. Stay tuned.
All right, Ryan, it's been a while since we've talked any recruiting whatsoever. We've been kind of leading up until games and obviously had some excitement around getting the season started. So let's actually dive into a little bit of recruiting right now. I'm just curious, you know, the season is underway. I have to imagine that things have to be dying down in recruiting a little bit. Is that the case?
I would think dying down is probably a nice way to put it at this stage in the season, as both the Minnesota coaches and the recruits are obviously focusing on the first few games of their season and or their senior year. So there's not a ton going on right now, especially with the Minnesota. On the Minnesota side right now, obviously, they had arguably one of the biggest games in the last 30 years, opening at home against number two TCU. That was on the forefront of the game plan sheet. And then they're going into a tough Colorado State team who won 10 games last year, before returning home for a couple of easier MAC games. So as far as recruiting right now, there's just not a ton going on. With, you know, on the high school side, again, these guys are a couple games now into their senior years, and they don't really want to focus solely on recruiting. And so are the coaches on the road? A little bit here and there. I was at the Monticello game last weekend to see Gophers offensive line commit Connor Olson, and I know that Matt Limegrover, the offensive coordinator slash offensive line coach, was there. So the Gopher coaches, when they do have a spare day, are going to be out on the road, especially with the Kent State game and the Ohio game coming up here. I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of these Gopher coaches out at different games around the metro here to see their different commits because of this such large crop of 2016 in-state recruits. But as far as, I mean, even just outside the state here, there's just not a ton going on, and it's, again, the staff's just focusing. And I would be, as of right now, there are no official visitors set up for any other weekend besides the Halloween night game against Michigan. So with the Gophers having two games here coming up on the 19th and I believe the 26th, if I can do my math correctly. No, I can't even think I'm doing my math. Yeah, the 19th and the 26th, versus Ohio and Kent State. Maybe one or two official visitors for those games, but not a ton.
Okay, so I'm curious, does that have to do more with, you know, this staff has been known to kind of like to look at senior film and evaluate guys later, or does that more has to do with the fact that they're content with, you know, the 15 guys that they have committed now? It's like 15 or 16, right? I don't actually know the number.
Yeah, it's 15.
Okay, so they're maybe more content with those 15 guys, and they feel like they have a good thing going, and now they're trying to identify some of those, you know, late-blooming seniors or whatever.
Absolutely. I believe that's a very good chunk of what's going on right now. From my connections within the Bierman or Gibson-Agurski football building there, it's a lot of the staff's waiting on some more games of senior film. And they need to, you know, find some spare time here from game planning for, you know, Colorado State and with TCU. But with this staff, obviously, they're known for getting these late bloomers like a Rashad Still, who they found out about, you know, really 3 weeks before signing day. And he turns out to be a stud, and he played last week against TCU and had a few catches. So they're just really looking and seeing what they need to really get in this for the remainder of this 2016 class. A couple positions that still need to be addressed are tight end, especially with the injury news that we'll talk about here very shortly, defensive end, defensive tackle, and a couple more defensive backs along with the running back. So there are more than a handful of spots here left. I'd be surprised if Minnesota isn't at around 23 come signing day, even though they may not have the scholarship numbers necessarily if you look at the scholarship chart that I have up on Gopher Digest. But it always seems that they always sign around 25 or so, but I think around 23 this year is probably realistic. So staff's kind of waiting and seeing on some of these guys. They are reaching out to a ton of different 2016 guys, especially on the defensive line in the tight end group. That they are expanding their pool a little bit, trying to get a look at where, you know, they're reaching out to guys from California to Maryland. You know, they don't care where you are in the nation. So
right.
It's just in a wait and see here mode for probably another week or so. And then I think the staff's probably going to get after it a little bit.
Obviously, if people want to check out your work on Gopher Digest, all they have to do is subscribe and they're going to get the latest and greatest information on recruiting because you're always on top of everything.
Yeah, recruiting is my bread and butter. That's what I was born and raised in here in the Gopher football scene. So I would be impressed if you found better recruiting coverage on the interwebs than what we have at Gopher Digest. So if any of this recruiting stuff, you know, impact is something that, you know, has an itch that you want to scratch, I encourage you to check it out on Gopher Digest. Obviously, I can guarantee that we are one of the best on the webs, if not the best. So give us a try. So we are now joined by Mr. Keegan Pope, who is the lead football writer here for the Colorado State publication, the Collegian, and has been working at the sports desk there since August of 2013. So Keegan's been on the beat there for over 2 years. So we are very happy to welcome Keegan tonight. So Keegan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
You know, just living the dream out here in Minnesota and ready for Saturday to get here. I'll tell you that much, but so for people who don't know, obviously the Gophers play Colorado State this Saturday afternoon at 2:30 Central Standard Time. And to get to know more of the enemy here, we have Keegan on. So Keegan, I will start out with this. How, obviously, Colorado State won their first game here over the weekend against Savannah State, putting up 65 points. So how has this Colorado State team dealt with losing their head coach, Jim McElwain, to Florida? Garrett Grayson, one of the best quarterbacks out there, to the Saints in the third round, I believe, and also their stud running back from last year, D. Hart, who was on the Dolphins the last time I checked. So how are they dealing with replacing three huge parts of their success in that 10-win team last year?
I think to touch on Jim McElwain, I think the transition has been pretty smooth to Mike Bobo, who was formerly the offensive coordinator at Georgia for more than a decade. This is actually his first coaching stop outside of the state of Georgia. But he's really bought in to this program, and this program has really bought into him. When you talk to basically anybody on the team, they talk about his passion and intensity for football, his passion for this program, his passion for his players. And I think that made the transition pretty easy. I think Jim McElwain was the guy that he came in and he really sold players on the vision of turning this program around. And Mike Bobo has really sold them on the vision of, okay, Coach McElwain turned this program around. Now how do we take it to the next step? In terms of on the field, I think the biggest loss would have to be Garrett Grayson. I mean, he was the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year last year. As you said, he went in the third round to the Saints, an impressive talent. Kind of the race started as soon as he left. It was between Nick Stevens, who is a redshirt sophomore, and Coleman Key, who's a redshirt freshman. So two guys who don't have a ton of experience. Stevens played a little bit in mop-up duty last year, and he won the starting job a little over 3 weeks ago into their, I believe it was second week of preseason camp. The big thing with Nick, I think, for people to watch out for is he's just really smart under center. As anybody on the team will tell you, he's probably the smartest guy that they have on the team. Even Garrett Grayson last year when, I mean, they discussed running a new some new plays and implementing a new offense and stuff like that. I mean, he said that Nick picked it up faster than anybody he'd ever seen. He picked it up faster than even he had. And so I think that's the big thing, is he's a guy that doesn't really have a real cannon for an arm, isn't going to wow you with his running ability or anything like that, but he makes really good decisions. And I think that, at this point for CSU, is really what they need. And I think that's the advantage he had over Coleman Key, was that he had the ability to make those decisions. And with the depth that CSU has at wide receiver, tight end, and running back, Nick was basically handed the keys to a Ferrari and asked not to crash it. Mike Bobo said that even at Georgia, they would be jealous of the recruiting or the receiving corps that CSU has here, not only Rashard Higgins, but even the guys behind him. And so Nick Stevens really has a lot to work with, and I think that was pretty evident against Savannah State. He threw for 5 touchdowns, all to 5 different receivers. So there's a lot of weapons to spread it around to. At running back, it'll really be replacement by committee. 2 years ago, CSU replaced Capri Bibbs, who was one of 3 players in NCAA history to rush for 30-plus touchdowns in a season. Last season, D. Hart came in kind of out of nowhere at the beginning of fall camp, decided to transfer in from Alabama as a grad transfer, and really kind of took the Mountain West by storm. They don't have anybody that I think is really going to be a go-to back, and I think with the pace and tempo that this offense plays with, you really can't only play one running back. And so they really rotate between mostly 3 guys. Dalen Dawkins, who's a transfer from Purdue, who's the nephew of former NFL player Brian Dawkins. They have Jason Oden, who's a converted safety. And they also have Trace Gerrals, who more than likely will be suiting up this weekend for the first time this year. He sat out last week with a minor knee injury, so he'll be back. And you'll kind of see it's probably spread evenly, the carries between those guys. You won't see probably a heavy dose of one guy unless he's really having a ton of success, because at the tempo that CSU likes to play, they really need as many guys in there depth-wise as possible to keep players running in and out that are fresh.
Keegan, curious a little bit to hear a little bit about Rashard Higgins. We have heard, you know, he is maybe dealing with a bit of an injury, but on top of that, I'm curious, for people that haven't seen him play, you know, his statistics are, they're staggering, really. You know, 96 receptions last year, 1,700 yards, 17 touchdowns. He alone averaged 145 yards a game. You know, just unbelievable. How does he get that done, and how is he just so productive?
To answer your question about the injury, they've really kind of kept that close to the vest, even with the local media here. Coach Bobo addressed it today as just a sprain. He wouldn't say whether it was a knee or an ankle or anything like that, but he did say that he expects Rashard to play on Saturday. To answer the rest, I think the big thing about Rashard is his versatility. You see a lot of receivers guys that can play in the slot that are really shifty, that may not want to go across the middle, that some guys that may not be able to beat you deep that are big guys but can't run very well. And Rashard's really kind of a combination of all of those things. I remember last year against Tulsa, he took a 2-yard screen pass and took it 70 yards for a touchdown. And then the next series just ran past somebody. And, I mean, just on a straight go route, just ran right past the defender and caught a fade route. So he can kind of do it all. The other thing, I think, is he's really kind of bought into the idea of being a complete receiver. He really worked on his blocking early this spring and then throughout fall camp. And that's one area where the receivers, coaches, the receivers and Coach Bobo have really complimented him, is that he's really become more of a blocking threat instead of just being a guy who's going to catch passes and then kind of stand out there on the perimeter. So I think overall, his production, I think, last year was in large part to the fact that CSU was a little bit unknown after him in terms of depth at receiver and tight end. They ended up having the All-Mountain West tight end, Stephen Walker. He was the postseason All-Mountain West selection. They had the preseason All-Mountain West selection, Keevon Cartwright, who missed last season with a foot injury. But after Rashard, really last year, there was a lot of questions as who would step up at receiver. And he really kind of just took that role over by himself. And so, I mean, you see the 96 catches, the 1,750 yards. I believe it's 17 touchdowns last season. You see those numbers, and, I mean, obviously it's an impressive stat line there. I think this season, especially probably this weekend, I don't think you'll see, I mean, gaudy numbers by any means. Minnesota obviously has a talented secondary, but you'll see CSU target him a lot. But I think those numbers probably won't be what they are this season just because of the depth at wide receiver. I mean, he had 9 catches for 84 yards and a touchdown last week, which, I mean, by Rashard Higgins' numbers is kind of a pedestrian day. But I think the depth at receiver, the ability for Nick Stevens to kind of throw the ball to any of these guys to make a play really takes some of the pressure off Rashard. And I think teams really know about who he is if they didn't before. I don't know how they couldn't have known last season by the numbers he was putting up, but if they didn't know then, they do now. That, I mean, this isn't a guy that you cover one-on-one. You got to roll coverages to him. You have to drop guys back into coverage to help out on him. And so I think you'll see a lot of targets to him, but I think you'll also see a lot of targets to other guys who can also make plays.
So obviously, as you said, there's a lot of weapons on this Colorado State offense, and that's why they put up 65 points last week in the route of Savannah State. So do you think, I mean, this offense is still as potent as last season, or is that because Savannah State's so awful? You know, obviously they lost 22 straight games. Or do you think it's a combination of the two?
I think it's definitely a combination of the two. I think in terms of quarterback play, CSU is obviously behind the curve of where it was last year. When you have a guy like Garrett Grayson, who in his junior season set a number of school records and then basically rewrote the school record book in his senior year, I think anytime you lose a guy like that, your quarterback play is going to take a hit. But I think everything around the quarterback is better than it was last year. So I think the CSU offense can really be pretty lethal again. I don't know that they'll be where they were last year, where they have a 4,000-yard passer and a 1,200-yard rusher and a 1,750-yard receiver. But I think they can be very good. But I think it's tough to judge off of a game against Savannah State, who, I mean, in watching a number of years of college football, has to be one of the worst Division I programs I think I've ever seen. For those who didn't hear anything about the game, Savannah State started the game by snapping the ball over their quarterback's head twice, the second time resulting in a touchdown for CSU, and they recovered the ball in the end zone. So I think a lot of it has to do with who they played, but I think this CSU offense is definitely one that people can't take lightly because of the loss of Garrett Grayson and Dee Hart.
All right, and for fans who are, you know, forget who we're talking with here, we're talking with Mr. Keegan Pope from the Colorado State publication, The Collegian. He's the lead football writer there and has been so for the last couple of years here. So, Keegan, next question for you. We've talked enough about, you know, the CSU Rams offense and how potent it is. Now the Gophers are really going to have to stop them on Saturday. But what are some of the, you know, what are some of the strengths for this Rams defense, and who are a couple names that Gopher fans should be keeping an eye on Saturday?
I think it starts on the back end. Two safeties, Kevin Pierre-Lewis and Trent Matthews. They've started a combined 64 games in their career. They've played substantially more than that. Pierre-Lewis has started 25 games, but he's played in, I believe, 38 through a little more than 3 years. Trent Matthews has started every game he played since he stepped on campus as a freshman. He has started 39 games at this point. So those are two guys, two big, strong safeties, two physical guys. Pierre-Lewis is one that definitely likes to hit. He's gotten in trouble with it a few times with targeting calls and stuff like that. So he can be a little over-aggressive at times, but he's not afraid to come up and hit anybody. Then you kind of got to look at the linebackers. And CSU last year lost two of its best, probably in school history, Aaron Davis and Max Morgan. They were two guys that both ranked in the top 10 in CSU history in tackles. So a lot to replace there. But they moved Corey James, who was they played a 3-4 last year. He was their rush linebacker last year. and they moved him into the middle because of his playmaking ability. He has 22 sacks in his career, which ranks fifth all-time at CSU. So he's a guy to watch. And then they have two big outside linebackers on the strong end weak side, and those are Kyle Robinson and Kevin Davis. Robinson stands probably about 6'2", 235, and Davis about 6'3", 245. So two big linebackers, both really like to hit. Kevin Davis, in the game against Colorado last year, knocked CU's quarterback through. Behind them is a guy named Josh Watson, who's a redshirt freshman, who's really in both their scrimmages in tackles, and then he also led the team last week in tackles against Savannah. So you'll see him. Likely they'll move James to on third down situations, passing situations. They'll move him to defensive end, and they'll probably move Watson into the middle linebacker spot. And then on the defensive line, two guys to watch are Joe Kowalik and Martavius Foster, who are CSU's two defensive ends. Foster, in his first start last week against Savannah State, had three sacks, the first three sacks of his career. He's a big guy, probably 6'4", 265, 270, moves pretty well. Kowalik's a little leaner, probably 6'6", 250, but he's a guy that's pretty quick off the ball, good with his hands. So those are two guys to watch in terms of pass rush. If CSU can develop a consistent pass rush, this defense can be pretty good. Relying on their secondary has been a bit of a struggle in past years. But CSU has some experience returning. They have three seniors in that secondary. So I think that's a group to watch out for, especially.
Play is the key, if that's more of an urban myth. I ask because, you know, here in Minneapolis, we're around Fort Collins is more like 4,800. Does that really play a factor?
Plays a factor. Physically, I don't know if it's as much as people play into it, but I think in Minnesota's case, they're 4,000 feet above where they typically play. You go into the foothills in Colorado and you go up another 4,000 feet and you do anything, dehydration, a little bit of dizziness if you don't take care of yourself. But I think a lot in their minds that they're playing at thinner altitude, in thinner air. And so I think it definitely plays a role physically. I'd be lying if I said that if you don't, it's a mind game. And I think that really helps schools on the front range. I know which stands at 7,220 feet. They have it plastered everywhere, people, that they're at 7,220 feet. So I think a lot of it is just kind of a mind they are.
All right, so last question here from Mr. Keegan Polk. Excuse me, the Colorado State lead football writer here. So last question for you, Keegan. What do you think is going to happen on Saturday? What is your prediction for the Gophers versus the Rams?
I think the big thing, and one I'm interested to watch, is, the offense, defense, CSU's offense versus Minnesota's defense. But to me, it comes down to special teams. And, last year CSU had one of the best kickers in the Mountain West. Jared Roberts set the consecutive extra point record. They still have a good punter returning, but their kicking game is a real big question. Against Savannah State, they had three kickoffs go out of bounds. They had a missed extra point and a missed field goal.
Wow.
Everybody on their kicking staff, I believe, is either a freshman or sophomore. So a lot of pressure on those guys, and I think special teams is where it comes down to. I think, in all honesty, CSU and Minnesota balance each other out pretty well. I think the CSU defense will be able to probably – contain, at least for the most part, the Minnesota rushing attack. And I think the Minnesota secondary will have its hands full with CSU's offense, but I think they'll do a pretty good job of limiting the big plays. And so I think it comes down to special teams, the little plays here and there, the hidden yardage, as coaches like to call it. So I think in terms of a score prediction, I think probably Minnesota 27, and CSU 21, maybe a field goal here or there that makes a difference for Minnesota.
Good deal. Good deal, Keegan. Again, we appreciate you being here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast here. So thanks for your time, Keegan, and we'll see how your prediction holds up on Saturday.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, Ryan. So we got a nice conversation with Keegan about Colorado State. Got some perspective from Fort Collins. Let's talk a little bit about this game, you know, more from a Gopher perspective. Obviously, coming off the loss to TCU, the offensive line was definitely a position of concern given the injuries and, you know, just kind of not knowing what to expect, you know, coming into this next week. Where are we at with, like, Campion, Lauer? You know, is Persig going to stay at left tackle? What's going to happen this week?
Yeah, so Kill came out today, and there's actually some pretty good news on the offensive line, which is, should be great news to all the Gopher fans listening right now. That Josh Campion, who was held out of the game last week and really didn't even dress, he was in a white jersey on the sidelines, who was held out with concussion issues. That was a huge red flag for me when we talked on, I believe, Sunday night about this, as Campion has a significant injury issue with these concussions, as it kept him out of his entire redshirt season in 2011. And for him to be back practicing, which he has been, he practiced on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday today, and Kill said in his press conference today that he expects Josh Campion will be full go come Saturday afternoon, which is, I cannot say enough how huge that is for this offensive line, especially considering the depth issues they do have at tackle there. So with Campion back now, Kill has said that he's probably going to put him at right tackle, and he and Foster Bush are going to be a little bit of a platoon as they ease Josh back in from that concussion issue to make sure there's no lingering effects so they have him healthy for the rest of the season. So that means that Jonah Persig, who translated over to left tackle after, I believe it was in the first quarter there, after Ben Lauer got burned on the
strip sack.
Fumble there in the red zone. He's going to be at left tackle, and Kill has been very complimentary of Jonah, saying the first game was very, very good, and they were very happy with him, so they're going to leave him there at left tackle to try and protect Liner's blind side while Josh Campion and Foster Bush get some work there. But there are a couple positions on this offensive line that are going to be platooning on Saturday that fans should, you know, if you want to really look at the nuances of the game, pay attention to these offensive line combinations. You're going to see a few different ones at right tackle with Josh Campion and Foster Bush, but the other position to watch, and which I talked about today on Gopher Digest, was the left guard position. If you noticed, if you go back and watch the film against TCU, Joe Bjorklund and John Christensen were really splitting snaps about 50-50. It was series after series that they seemed to rotate. And I saw that, and I was able to ask one of the sources I have close to the Gibson-Nagurski complex about that. And what he told me was that they really want to keep both Christensen and Bjorklund fresh as the season goes on. Bjorklund started most of the games for the Gophers at guard last year once the Big Ten season got going. And they thought that he may have worn down a little bit towards the end because he was playing so damn hard. And with Christensen coming back after a significant leg injury, they're trying to both keep both guys fresh. And another reason for the platoon is that it sounded like Limegrover, you know, couldn't really decide on who was playing better coming out of fall camp. So why not give both guys reps in the first game? And I thought they both did well. So at left guard and right tackle on Saturday, it seems like it's going to be a little bit of a platoon. So that's something to keep an eye on there. But the offensive line is getting healthy. Ben Lauer is still not practicing this week, and I don't expect him to play on Saturday. So your tackles are going to be Jonah Persig at left and Josh Campion and Foster Bush at right.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the situation we have at tight end. Obviously, Duke I can't even say his name.
Duke Onyanwu.
I hear you say that all the time, and I'm just impressed at how consistent you are at that. And then, additionally, besides Duke, we had Lincoln Plesic that didn't play. Well, you know, what's the status with those guys, and should we expect them to play large roles at any point this season?
Yeah, so Kill came out after practice today. Part of the question right now is if Onyanwu or Lincoln Plesic play again this year. So they may be done, though, at the Gophers ball scrimmage. I would have been like, are you joking, or... the knee injury, and he had it scoped out. It was that same knee he was having issues with. So he tore, I believe it was his right knee in the fall camp of 2014. And then in this fall camp of 2015, he was having some soreness, some lingering pain. So they went in and got a scope of it, and apparently it's just not going well, and there's still some soreness and whatnot. So he may be out for the year. And then with Lincoln Plesic, the senior tight end, the road grader there, who's probably never got enough recognition for what he's done for this Gopher game on the running side of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely there.
His back is apparently so bad. I don't know what if it's some kind of a slipped disc or bulging disc, something like that. I don't know specifically what it is. I don't know if Kill has said it outright, but he may be done for the year as well. It's something that this tight end depth is going to be very inexperienced. And guys like Brandon Lingen and Nate Wozniak, who played a ton against TCU in that two tight end sets, and then guys like Colton Beebe, the true freshman, he's going to have to really start to step up here, and I think he's going to see the field a lot, starting maybe as soon as Saturday. And then a guy like Jerry Gibson, who is MIA from the field, from the participation report, I believe, he's going to be a guy that's probably going to be expected to have some kind of a role in these tight ends. So, again, it's if Onyanwu and Plesic are done, it's seriously going to test this Gopher tight end depth. And after Wozniak and Lingen, who, again, two guys who really haven't played a ton of snaps, one's a true sophomore, one's a redshirt sophomore. You have a lot of inexperience there that's going to have to get seasoned pretty quickly here.
Yeah, definitely. Let's transition to the defensive side of the ball. And I know that Kill mentioned this week that he was a little concerned with some injuries as well there. I don't want to dwell too much on injuries, but when he mentioned some concern, who is he really concerned about?
Yeah, the name that's being talked about, who Kill said after practice today on Wednesday that is very questionable for the game on Saturday, is safety Demaryius Travis, which is a little bit surprising to me, as he played the entire game against TCU, and apparently he walked off the field, he was limping a little bit. But Kill hasn't said what the injury is specifically yet, so it's a little bit of an unknown at this point. So if Demaryius can't go, obviously that is a little bit of a blow to this Gopher secondary, as Demaryius is a guy who I expect to be playing in the NFL next year. But, I mean, as you can tell from the inflection of my voice, I'm not very concerned. Travis is a very good player for this Gopher team, but you have guys behind him like Ace Rogers, who had a heck of a first game in his Gopher collegiate debut. You have Kune Ayinde, another guy, a walk-on from Blaine, who has played a lot of snaps on Thursday night. And then you have a guy like Duke McGee, a redshirt sophomore, who's been in the system now 3 years. So you have three capable guys there. You have a true freshman, Dior Johnson, who may have to play now on special teams to pick up the slack for what Demaryius provides there. But I'm not too concerned there. But on the defense side of the ball, Minnesota is pretty healthy otherwise than Demaryius Travis. So, guys like Scott Epke, Stephen Richardson should be ready to go come Saturday afternoon.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this game and not focus so much on personnel and injuries. So let's just talk about what you're going to expect out of the Gophers. Obviously, offensively, they were criticized a little bit just because they weren't able to put up points against TCU. So what are you kind of expecting offensively in this game? Are we going to see them slow down the pace a little bit, get back to that more traditional smash-mouth football, running the ball a lot, or are we going to see that tempo pick up again?
I think it's probably going to be more back to the traditional Minnesota offense that fans are used to, where it's going to be, running back, a fullback, a couple of tight ends, 1-2 wide receiver sets. But I think that while Minnesota probably wants to get back to that to get some guys some work against some good competition, I wouldn't be surprised if they go a little bit of the TCU game plan where they have 3-4 wide receiver sets, don't do too much with a fullback. It all depends on what Linebrover wants to do, and knowing that he has that up-tempo on film and the guys were comfortable doing it, and it looked like it was pretty effective for the time being. I think they have a bunch of different things they can go to. And again, it's all, situationally dependent. Obviously, if we're up, 17-7 in the middle of the third quarter, you're probably not going to go up tempo as much, and you're going to want to slow it down, give it to Roderick, give it to Rodney, see what they can do. But as far as what you can expect to see from this offense, well, I'm not at practice every day because the media can't be there watching. I wish I could, but I would expect probably more Rodney Smith first and foremost, as Kill came out and said that Rodney played 46 plays and he graded out perfectly.
Yeah.
That was the first time that's ever happened for a first-time guy in this game in Kill's, you know, tenure, that a freshman comes in, plays 46 snaps at running back, and is really graded out perfectly. You know, again, if you want to join on the Roddy Smith bandwagon, I have plenty of room here next to me. I got plenty of room behind me. I got some room in front of me, even though the legroom's going to be a little bit tight here soon. But
you've been captaining this movement, this Rodney Smith movement, for I don't know, basically the better part of a couple months, right? So you know what, sir? Congratulations. You're right. It looks like you're on to something there.
Yeah, I can imagine the people listening to this right now rolling their eyes at me. But hey, I'm just saying, if you want to join on this Rodney Smith bandwagon that, you know, people didn't believe me until they saw it for their own eyes. I've seen it at practice now for basically a full year about his vision, his patience, his speed. He's the next David Cobb, folks. And the only difference between he and David is David has 20 pounds on him, but where David has that on him, Rodney has a fourth gear. So those long runs that Cobb would go 50, 60 yards and get hit at the 10-yard line, Rodney's not going to get caught, folks. He's going to take it all the way. So I think Rodney Smith is a guy that's probably going to be playing more going forward. Maybe more of a 60-40 with Roderick, considering it was probably more – the game plan was probably going into TCU 64 Roderick. Now it's probably 64 Rodney. But maybe I'm wrong. We'll see what happens on Saturday. But on defense, I expect Minnesota to go back to their base defense of a 4-3, maybe a 4-2. Again, TCU. Colorado State is very capable of putting up a lot of points, but this Gopher secondary, this Gopher defense in general, is one of the best in the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect Minnesota to get back to more of their base offense and defense, two tight end sets with a fullback potentially, and then on defense a 4-3 or some nickel. But back to what the Gopher football fans are usually accustomed to under Jerry Kill.
Yeah, base offense, especially based on what we heard from Keegan, right? Where they're definitely more going to push the this was all new to me, so it would make sense that it'd be more of a ball control and try to keep TCU was, and we tried to run with them. So it could be interesting. They could take the total.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they did so, but again, they are capable of it. They have it on film. It was
right.
The guys are accustomed to, and they have it in their back pocket. They know they can do it, but I expect Minnesota is going to beat you up front, especially with this offensive line getting healthy. And, I mean, like you did last week, I think you can probably get accustomed to Leidner throwing it probably around of a Melvin Holland, maybe Jeff Jones. I don't even want to bring up Jones. Should be already in the Heisman running when
right.
He's basically a true freshman transitioning to no. Am I concerned about his development at all? Absolutely not. I know what I saw this fall. I mean, Jeff, he's just trying to wrap his mind around the mental aspect of the game and getting ready for these who Minnesota trots out there on Saturday. But there are some guys that are Kill set today, that wide receiver Isaiah Gentry, who's been out for it seems like a month now with a hamstring injury. He knows what he can do, and he's dynamic. He's a dynamite guy, and they need him back. So Minnesota's getting help.
More thing, I'm wondering if some of that pace of play, you know, picking that up, has anything to do with so much depth at the tight end position, right? Because they ran so many tight ends onto the field last year between Matt. You had, I'm sure I'm missing, Goodger is another one, right? And right now
right.
They just maybe don't have that depth, and I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it.
You know, that's something I really hadn't thought of, and I mean, that may be the case. I think it was probably just more game plan dependent, trying to spread out this TCU 4-2 fighting in, and Nate Wozniak, the blockers. I mean, 6'10", 275, and 6'5".
Yeah.
What's behind them is the issue for me. I mean, you have guys like Jerry Gibson, Colton Beebe, Noah Scarver, Nick Hart, guys that aren't the biggest guys in the world and guys that are still very fairly young. Most of the guys are redshirt sophomores, redshirt freshmen. They're a true freshman. So the depth there at tight end is a little bit scary, and that's why this 2016 class, which will probably include at least probably an H-back and a Y tight end, is something that Minnesota really has to address, because depth with Anyanwu and Plezic out, which is two guys they were expecting a lot of big things from this fall, has been a little bit of an issue.
Right. Maybe we'll finally see Chris Streveler get some run at H-back. Who knows? You know that.
Yeah.
You never know.
I mean, we could probably do another 20 minutes on where was Chris Streveler?
Let's not. Let's really not. Okay.
All right. The only thing I'll say about Streveler, I wouldn't be surprised if they throw him out of HVAC, considering what they know now that Plesic and Onyanwu might be done for the year. And if they feel comfortable with either Para or Croft there, I think that, you know, Streveler could get a huge weapon at HVAC, but we will see it. I mean, we didn't see it at all against TCU, and until I don't want to spend any more time on Streveler to HVAC until I see it on game film, so maybe Saturday's the day.
You're going to just blow up Gopher Twitter, just seriously, just even speculating that Streveler's going to play HVAC, and they're just going to just be begging for Demery Croft. Okay, so before we get to prediction time, I'm wondering if we should start a little segment that goes, will the Gophers ever play base defense? So it sounds like they're gonna play another spread team. So I imagine they're gonna play a lot of nickel, right? Again. So do you think that we'll see the Gophers in a base defensive set this week?
Well, my question for you is: do you think base defense is 4-3, or do you think it's nickel?
You picked my brain. Like, I don't know how you figured that out. I was gonna say maybe nickel is the new base defense in college football.
I think it is.
I think it is too.
That's what I was gonna argue.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Minnesota probably played nickels 60% of the snaps last year because of how.
Yeah, this is just the way college football really is going. It's absolutely how college football is going. Maybe we should start, you know, a new Twitter hashtag, like, did anybody see a base defense this weekend? I have no idea.
Do I think we're going to see a 4-3 front this weekend? I bet you we see it for a few snaps, but I would be willing to bet Minnesota's in nickel majority of the time, knowing a little bit about this Colorado State Rams offense and Rashard Higgins. I am very intrigued to see the matchup of the game, which is definitely All-American wide receiver Rashard Higgins against future NFL prospect Eric Murray.
Yeah.
I am so excited to see how Murray handles him and Boddy Calhoun, plus Jalen Myrick, who I thought did well against, the TCU stud wide receiver there, whose name escapes me at this time. But I think this Gopher secondary against Rashard Higgins is going to be something to watch. I wonder if Minnesota puts a safety over the top on him and dares the Colorado State quarterback to throw to somebody else besides him, but we'll see. But I think Minnesota's probably in their base, which I'm going to call nickel, so 4-2-5, probably a majority of the game, and I think you're probably going to see that every game this season. Minnesota's going to play, you know, nickel against majority of the teams except, like, Wisconsin, who are, are a lot like Minnesota, two tight end sets with a fullback. And in those games, I think you'll see a lot of Jack Lynn, Devondre Campbell, and Cody Polk, but a lot of nickel this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's get to the prediction. What do you got for this game?
Well, I've fielded a couple questions today on the message board here on Gopher Digest about, do you think that Minnesota is going to be in any kind of a letdown mode coming off a tough game at TCU? And my response to that is I don't think that's going to be the case at all, because it's not like Colorado State is a Kent State team where they won two games last year. Colorado State's pretty dang good in their own right coming off a 10-win season. Especially on this Gopher defense, they know a lot about Rashard Higgins. They know a lot about what this offense can do. Obviously, they put up 65 points against I hope you can put up 65 points against an awful Savannah State team that hasn't won a game in two seasons, you know, lost 22 straight. But I feel like Minnesota is going to come out motivated. They know that they need to get a win on the board if they want to continue to compete for the Big Ten West, which is their expectations this year, and to try and get to Indianapolis. But I think you're going to see a lot of Rodney and Broderick early in the game, opening up the play action game. From watching it in the play box, in the press box, Minnesota did take their shots. Obviously, the KJ May flea flicker. They tried to hit Eric Carter and Rashad Steele on play action deep balls. Carter had it go through his hands. Was it underthrown? A little bit, yes. And would a guy like Rashad Steele probably have caught that one, 5'10 against 6'6"? I would like to think so, but I'm not the wide receivers coach, nor do I want that job at all, so I'm not going to critique that. On the Rashad double move where it appeared that Leitner overthrew him, he did a little bit, but Rashad didn't get a clean break in his route. He tried to work a double move and was cut off. So I think that there's going to be a heavy dose of Rodney, a heavy dose of Roderick. You're probably going to see the tight ends in the game, you know, working in the passing game a little bit more. But I think that this Gopher defense shuts down the Colorado State offense, holding them to 14, 17 points. And I think Minnesota comes out on top 27-14. What do you think?
Okay, so I think I feel really good about the defense and where it was at. I'm a little concerned with the Demaryius Travis situation, not knowing where that is. And I'm curious to see if there isn't even more injuries that haven't been discussed on the defensive side, just given the way Kill's been talking. So I'm a little bit concerned there, but I do think this defense is built to cover spread teams. And so I feel pretty good about this matchup from that perspective. What I need to see is I need to see some efficiency offensively, you know, and when I say efficiency, I need to see some more consistency, really. If they can sustain a couple drives and keep the defense off the field, I'm going to feel pretty good about this. I really like Rodney Smith. I'm on the bandwagon. I'm right behind you. It didn't take much.
Yay, yay.
What?
Yay, yay.
Yeah,
bandwagon, everybody.
Yeah, I did not take much convincing, but I do really like him. I'm really excited to see him get a bulk of those carries, and I think he will this week. I'm going to take the Gophers with a 28-21 victory. I think that it'll be closer than, you know, you might expect. And I was interested to hear Keegan's point on the kicking game. You know, I think that's something we definitely have.
Absolutely.
We maybe take for granted too often with the strength of our special teams right now. You know, Santoso hasn't been incredibly consistent like last year. He was maybe, 75-80% on field goals. But, you know, he didn't miss extra points other than, you know, the failed two-point conversion where he just needed to lower his head against Purdue. But, you know, I'm very confident in what we have in our kicking game. So I thought that was a really interesting point, and I hope it doesn't come down to kicks. But if it does, I'm confident we'll be able to come out on top.
Yeah, how about that? Their kicker keeps three balls out of bounds in the opening game.
Yeah, very interesting.
He misses an extra point.
Yeah, very, 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 very interesting. So,
again, like you said, I think Gopher fans take it for granted now under Jerry Kill how much of a strength this kicking game really is, and just the entire special teams is. Minnesota has won a couple of games here in the last few seasons because of the special teams. And if you don't have a good kicking game and it comes down to a close game, like you said, I mean, would you rather have the Colorado State kicker who kicks three out of bounds and he misses an extra point, or do you have Ryan Santoso who's made a few kicks here to win some games, and has been consistent, more consistent of late? Again, small sample size through one game, but yeah, we'll see. It should be a good game for the fans who are traveling out there to Fort Collins. It's a beautiful area out there. You'll have a blast watching the game. So for those of us at home, it'll be on the CBS Sports Network, I believe. So
yeah,
it should be a good one.
Yeah, good luck finding that channel, and we want to thank you for listening to the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. Again, if you can go to iTunes and rate the podcast, that's appreciated. You know, we're doing quite well in the high school and college sports new and noteworthy category. And that's all thanks to you. So thanks a bunch. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we can't thank you guys enough. The support that this podcast has seen here, even in the last few weeks, has been overwhelming. And we appreciate you guys supporting what we do and supporting the guys we bring on, such as the Derek Burns to break down games, or beat writers like Keegan Pope from Colorado State. It really helps. And if you like it, anything that we talk about here, again, we encourage you to check out GopherDigest.com. I mean, most of the things we talk about on here are already things we discussed earlier in the day or in the last few days. So if you want an internet destination for your Gopher fandom and you have that scratch you need to address, we encourage you to come on to Gopher Digest and join us. So until then, we'll talk to you guys again after the Colorado State game with Derek Burns. So go Gophers.